Good morning. This is Leading Age DC, Leading Age Maryland, Leading Age Virginia, Tuesday stand-up. And this morning we are very pleased to have Nancy Connolly of RCM&D talk to us about distinguishing between empathy and apology after an adverse event, what you need to know. Nancy, take it away.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me present this morning. I have to apologize in advance because as pretty as those spring flowers are, the pollen is getting to me, so I apologize. My voice gives out. So anyway, thanks again, and I want to talk about what I think is really a critical conversation. You know, as I said to Deborah when we were talking about setting this up, you might have a wonderful facility that's staffed and led by dedicated individuals, and everyone's committed to doing the right thing. But the reality is that no matter how much expertise there is or how comprehensive the policies are or how well-trained the staff is, things go wrong. And when they do, we sometimes stumble on what to do. So whether you call this a safety event, an incident, an adverse event, or it's a sentinel event, I want to talk about communication immediately after, which is, being able to communicate immediately after is really a critically important skill for all levels of staff and leadership. And I work as a risk management consultant. I work with hospitals and long-term care facilities. And I frequently get calls where I learn that families sought an attorney because they were stonewalled or got the silent treatment, or they say no one would tell them what happened. And I sometimes get these calls several months later, and at that point it's pretty hard to have that conversation that should have taken place at the time. And when I ask the facilities if they've had the conversation, I frequently hear that they will only have the conversation if the family requests one, or they'll wait to hear from the family's attorney. And so I never really understand why would we put the ball in their court, especially if the event was a result of our actions or lack of actions. And one argument I hear frequently is that these conversations don't prevent lawsuits. But preventing lawsuits is not why we offer these expressions. We do it because it's the right thing to do. And I chose this topic because it's critically important that frontline staff and leadership know how to communicate with residents and families following an event. As I said so often, the response is to avoid it, but I always believe it's better to run towards it rather than away from it. I'll stop short of the contents of a disclosure conversation because that's a different topic. I've attended training programs and done some presentations on apology and disclosure, and I recently attended a session by Doug Wojcicki. You may have heard of him. He's the president of the Sorry Works organization. If you want to check it out, it's sorryworks.net. There's a lot of good resources on there. And he's been the backbone of many of these types of presentations and conversations for a number of years. Doug pointed out some important distinctions I want to share with you, and I'll blend some of his advice with my own. So I started preparing for this today by listing a number of things to know, and I think I have about 10 that address the what, where, why, when, and how. And first, I want to talk about the distinction between empathy and apology. Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. An apology is a regretful acknowledgement of an offense or failure. And those definitions are from a standard, the Oxford Dictionary. And the distinction is an important one. In the context of this type of discussion, Doug explained the difference this way. A statement of empathy says, I'm sorry this happened. I feel bad for you. An apology says, I'm sorry I made this mistake. It's my fault. Some key points about empathy. Empathy is appropriate 100% of the time, but apologies are appropriate only after a review of the event is complete. And as an analogy, I thought this was a great analogy. He pointed out what we might say when we go to a funeral. We say to the family or the survivors, I'm sorry. And we mean we're sorry for the person's loss or for what they're going through. We aren't sorry because we caused the death. An empathetic statement might be, I can only imagine how upsetting this is for you. Please know we're doing a review and we will be able to report back to you. I always like to avoid using the word investigation because it has a somewhat potentially negative connotation. In some states, there's statutory language related to this. For example, in Maryland, Health General Section 10920, to abbreviate and summarize it, it says an expression of regret or apology is inadmissible as evidence of an admission of liability. And the second part of the statute is an admission of liability or fault that is part of or in addition to the expression of regret or apology is admissible as evidence of an admission of liability. The second thing is when to have the conversation. It can certainly take place immediately after the event. It's important that empathy is expressed and I'm sorry is said as soon as possible. And if something happens at 1 a.m., we don't want to wait until the administrator comes in at 8 the next morning. So all levels of staff should know how to manage this communication. The setting for the conversation will vary. It may be in the residence room. It may be elsewhere in the facility. If some time has passed, you know, like the folks who wait, it might be in the hospital if the resident is admitted for the injury. You should try to talk in a private area so you can sit down with the person, look them in the eye, and maybe place a reassuring hand. And I always like to suggest avoiding long conference tables with, you know, sides, like family on one side and the facility's representatives on the other. And always avoiding distractions and interruptions is important. As far as making promises goes, sometimes in the heat of the moment, we hurriedly make promises in an effort to immediately right the perceived wrong. We might say something like, "We will take care of all your bills," or "That staff member will be fired." Then come to find out the facility isn't responsible, or there are Medicare liens to be dealt with, or the staff member was set up for failure, and the event resulted from a systems problem, not an individual one. People frequently hang on to your words, so be cautious when you make such promises. And when I talk about a systems problem by setting up for failure, I mean as a scenario, a resident is dropped during a transfer and has an injury. There's lift equipment involved. And it's a two-person, you know, the equipment calls for two people to use it, but the staff member was trained that they could transfer this resident that way because she only weighs 90 pounds, she's easy to handle, and we do it this way every day. And the charge nurse is aware, everybody's aware, and then the injury happens. She's been transferred this way for a very long time, then one day the injury happens, and now the staff member is in trouble. So that's what I mean by setting up for failure. The service recovery elements. Look at those following an adverse event. What does the person need right now? What can we do to help them? Do they need help to make phone calls? Does an out-of-town family member need a hotel room so they can be nearby while their loved one is in the hospital? Do they need a member of the clergy? If the resident is injured and needs to go to the hospital, can a member of your team accompany the resident to the hospital? One of my facility does this, and it really goes a long way, and it's especially meaningful if there's no family in the area. And on a similar note, can someone periodically visit the resident in the hospital? When you meet with them, give them your business card. Here's my business card. Don't hesitate to call me, and really mean it. Take care of their needs now and worry about the accountability later. Even if it turns out there's no fault on the part of the facility, such service recovery actions can go a long way in maintaining a trusting relationship, and many of these don't cost a thing. You'll want to be sure you also document the conversation, including facts and objective language. Document what was said and anything the resident or family said, as well as your plan going forward. Don't include emotional statements, blame, or speculation. Don't include derogatory remarks about the resident, the family, or other colleagues. And just keep it very objective. The second part of the conversation has to do with, after that empathetic statement, the frontline providers should call someone in charge, a supervisor, administrator, director of nursing, or risk manager. Make sure that those phone numbers or a way to contact leadership is posted or otherwise available everywhere so there are no excuses for not communicating about the event, because these serious events are something that you want to know about right away, of course. When you're talking with the family and you're promising that you will get back after your evaluation, be very specific. Even if there's nothing new to report, let them know when the next meeting or update is planned, and try to avoid using phrases like "we'll get back to you as soon as we can" or "after a review," and even if there's nothing to be said, to touch base with them on a regular basis. So I'm just going to go off course for a minute and talk a little bit about the review itself. It's important that it started right away and the event isn't allowed to snowball. Don't wait for the family to make a complaint, for the Office of Healthcare Quality or the Department of Health to knock on your door. This shouldn't drag on for weeks or months, because the longer it takes, the less credible it appears and the relationship will suffer. Conduct a review with the help of leadership and any other subject matter experts in your organization, and involve outside experts as needed. Doug, in his presentation, equated using only internal sources as looking like you're grading your own papers. And of course, you don't need external experts for every event, but certainly the serious ones. As part of your review, I always recommend sitting down with the resident and family and getting their perspective. This is a great source of information that many facilities leave out, and it helps you build your relationship. It helps show your transparency, and they frequently have information that no one else does. As I said, stay in close contact with them during the review, even if you have nothing new to report. When the review is finished, set up a meeting, express empathy again, and if warranted, apologize. Explain what happened and how you'll fix it. And what you need to know from them is, what can we do to make this right? Ask them, what can we do to make this right? What can we do to have you trust us again? Because that's really what you need to know. And after people hear your sincere plan of correction, they may not be interested in financial compensation. Many people just want to know that whatever happened to them will not happen again. There are a number of barriers to having that conversation. I will acknowledge that it is a very hard conversation to have. The first one is fear, being afraid of what their reaction might be. We might also feel guilty that we made a mistake and the resident suffered. Here I am, a fill-in-the-blank, a nurse, administrator, pharmacist, and I made an error that caused harm. Another barrier is denial, the sentiment that it wasn't my fault but someone else's. Believing or assuming that it was someone else's fault, why should I be the one to step up? Like anything else, practice makes perfect, and we can learn how to become more proficient with these conversations. Some people are naturally better communicators than others, so they might be the people in your organization who are tapped to perform this duty or to train others. I can't stress enough the importance of role-playing to help break down some of these barriers. It can be a very uncomfortable situation, but this can be remedied in part through education and repeated practice. Try to use I instead of we, because I think that personalizes the empathetic statements. And be aware of body language, both yours and that of the person you're speaking with. 85% of communication is how you say versus what you say. Even if it appears there's some fault on the part of the facility, the initial conversation is not the time to admit fault. It's not the time to speculate or place blame on another colleague, professional, or organization. Only admit fault after the review has proven a mistake occurred and the error caused or contributed to the injury. And another thing is that it's okay to pause during these conversations. Let the person digest what you're saying. And you also need to digest what they're saying. I know a few seconds can feel like an hour, but pausing is okay. Let them know you're taking the situation very seriously, and remember to stay connected. So I'll leave you with this. Review your communication processes. Look around your facility at what happens after an adverse event. And if you don't have a good process, I strongly encourage you to create one. And you can do that by finding the champions in your organization. It might be you, it might be someone you think that is a great communicator. Have the champions assemble and put them to work. Create a disclosure team. Seek out training. There's lots of training out there that low or no cost. Roll it out to the facility. Stress awareness of the importance of this type of conversation, the available training, your leadership and team presence, and 24/7 support. And that is all I have today. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Nancy. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording of the call, and then I'll unmute the lines.